Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Moritz, the CEO of Battery. Energy storage is one of the most crucial areas of the energy transition. Batteries power devices and ideally are charged really quickly in order to fulfill their job. Traditionally, this has been challenging or came at the expense of the battery's performance. Well, that's until now. Battery is set out to change the battery landscape, and we'll learn more about that in just a second. Welcome, Moritz.
It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. Let's get us started. Who are you, Moritz? Tell our listeners a bit about yourself.
Yes, so to myself, I'm Moritz. I'm a father of two, a physicist by training, and passionate about renewable energy and storage.
Lovely. And I guess your studies probably have also sparked the idea for Battery, the company that you're the CEO of now. So tell us a bit about that journey.
Yes.
What was the sort of the research that you did? What was the starting point for Battery?
Yes, I'm sure. So I originally grew up in Vienna, in Austria, where I did a technical school, more in the topic information technology. But then I realized quickly that I wanted to learn more. I wanted to understand more. And then I started studying physics in Germany. I started in Konstanz, in the Lake of Konstanz, very beautiful small town in the south of Germany, where I had the pleasure to, or in a way also I was a bit lucky and had a good professor who recommended me to go to Cambridge to do my bachelor thesis, where I really first was in contact with thin films. And really thin films also for energy generation. In my case, it was more about optics, optical metamaterial, so trying to make something invisible in a way, which was fun.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yes. Then I went to Munich to do my master's, where I focused more on solar cells. I did my master thesis in Berlin, where I worked on semiconductors and especially thin film semiconductors, inorganic and organic, and the boundary between these two. And then I did a PhD. I did a PhD in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, where I really worked on solar cell materials, so new materials for energy generation. And that was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. So I went, I continued with a postdoc in Switzerland, but I switched the direction a bit. So I went from solar cells to batteries, not knowing back then how active this field is and
right.
Well, what is happening there. So I was a lucky choice in a way as well to switch in this direction, and being in the battery field and especially in the research group where I have been worked at EMPA in Switzerland, and where we quickly was involved into project management, project acquisition. So I had a lot of contact with industries as well. And kind of this contact with industry, talking about new projects and seeing where the need of the industry is, this kind of sparked my interest about starting my own company. And especially, I remember one conversation with one company where they indeed even asked, "That sounds very interesting. We don't know anyone doing this right now. Why don't you do it yourself?"
Right. What was the industry's pain point? Can you be more specific there? What was that they were looking for that no one else was doing at that moment
yes.
in time?
Yes. So we at EMPA, we are a thin film laboratory. So we are looking at thin film materials for solar cells, but also for batteries. In solar cells, thin films is something very common. They're using often vacuum processing techniques, so like a semiconductor industry. And we in the research group, we also did this for batteries. And there are not a lot of companies, also research groups, using these techniques to build batteries.
Right.
And so we were in contact with these large machine fabrication companies who wanted to explore this battery space. And there kind of we saw, okay, they are interested in moving into this space and they're really relatively big players.
And this, right. This and I mean, if they're showing interest, then you're onto something.
Yes. And this indeed actually then led to, because until then, I was very convinced that I want to be in academia. I want to be a professor, and I somewhat was on the right track. I think I even got offered a permanent position in academia just
Right,
last
which is
year.
not that usual either, right?
Exactly.
Knowing the struggles of
Exactly.
academia.
So that was kind of a hard decision for me at this point, but then kind of seeing what potential impact you can make with a company, that kind of then helped me decide to go in this direction.
Right, and then that journey brings us here today. Lovely. Thank you
Yes.
for the intro. Interesting to see how many different stops or sort of a stages you had on that journey, starting in Austria, going through two German cities to the Netherlands, and now to Switzerland. It's been
Yes.
even quite an international and European journey.
Yeah, I really made use of the bachelor master system, I think, to the extent, the most extent you can.
Right. Was there anything, I mean, having lived then in those, well, in four countries now, are there, or what was most striking in that respect? Is there something that you took away from that time that still helps you today, even maybe potentially navigate the challenges of, well, founding a company, working in different geographies, working together with different people? Maybe give a bit of insight there.
Yes, definitely. Very strongly. So especially the network I grew over the years. So being in many different research groups across Europe, I made a lot of connections and many people from academia at some point leave academia and they are distributed in all kind of position in industry.
Right.
And now I'm back in contact with many of these people who I met a long time ago and they're now in very good position in some of big companies and that definitely helps.
Yeah, and I guess that's key to founding the company, knowing the right people, ideally having worked with them in the past and sort of
Yes.
having that personal bond. All right. I mean, we started talking about Battery, your company now. So in a nutshell, what is it that you do?
So we want to be a battery manufacturer within Europe. And our vision is to develop a solid state battery that you can be charged in just 1 minute.
And I guess that's the ambitious part, right? Because for people not knowing the battery space, can you explain a bit more where the real game changer lies?
Yes, definitely. So if we, for example, look at the sector of portable energy storage, we have lithium ion batteries, which are very good in storing a lot of energy, which are also allowed the electrification of cars and buses, for example, now.
Right. Those are the most used ones, right?
Yes. Yes, but in terms of charging time, they still need long time to charge, typically tens of minutes to more typically even an hour. So even if you would take some of the best batteries today and you really fully utilize them from 0 to 100 percent state of charge, it usually takes an hour. And then you have on the other spectrum, and on the end of the spectrum, you have super capacitors. They're very good in charging quickly, so they can charge in seconds, but they usually don't carry so much energy, so you cannot use them in many portable applications. And
Yeah,
this is
they're really
really
for
where.
specific high energy intense applications,
Yes,
right?
exactly. And this is exactly where we want to position ourselves in between these two, so still having a high energy density. But also having a fast charge time, not in a lot of seconds, but still in 1 minute.
Right. I think that was really helpful. Thank you for sort of giving the background for those who don't know the storage sector that well. And since we were just talking about applications, maybe you can give a bit of insight there into where your batteries will be used in the future or should be used in the future.
So, potential many applications which such a battery could be useful, but since we are still in the very early stage and we are trying to scale our technology, we are now looking at applications where only small batteries are needed. So, example for sensors for certain IoT applications. Very concrete example is there are companies trying to make indoor sensors, for example, CO2 monitoring. And this should be something very flat, which you stick on the wall. Ideally, you don't notice it too much. And so you would need a certain battery to do this. Ideally, a flat battery, which has a certain form factor. This is something which we can do, and maybe also important to say, today they're typically using a battery and a supercapacitors, both.
Right.
Other applications we're looking at is, for example, there are companies monitoring certain processes and in an industrial setting. So, for example, at a steam a steam pipe, they can be very hot, and if you want to monitor something like vibrations on a steam pipe, you need a device, ideally, which can sustain very high temperatures. And also there, today's batteries and supercapacitors are not so good in doing this. And since we are a truly all solid state battery, we can extend the temperature range to the high temperature more easily.
Gotcha. Yeah, that sounds really exciting to sort of bridge the gap between traditional batteries and supercaps, as well as then obviously extending the product range where current tech is just not well suited because of, and there, I guess we close the loop to where you come from originally,
Yes,
physics
exactly.
involved, to sort of say, look, those are the boundaries of physics, but our technology is just able to perform better in those instances. In summarizing your approach, what would you say are the USPs? Is it the speed combined with the high energy density?
So there are a few things. One is definitely the combination of high energy density and high charging rate. And this is really possible using the semiconductor manufacturing techniques, where we have very thin layers. And these thin layers are key for fast charging.
Right.
So basically, you have very short distances for electrons and ions, all the charges, to move. And at these short distances, then allow very fast charging rates. But also, as mentioned, for the IoT applications, we can offer an extended temperature range. This is both for high temperatures, but also for negative temperatures. Since same effect, we have very thin layers, and all solid layers, we can go to low temperatures, which is another interesting use case. Opening there is, for example, for space applications, which
Right.
we are working, or we are supported by the business incubator from the European Space Agency. And we talked a lot to them for using our batteries for space. So yeah, these are very, very much the unique selling points, I would say. And then maybe this still has to be proven, of course, but the materials which we are using in an academic setting at least have proven to be 10 times more stable compared to today's battery.
Which is quite a lot, right? Given
Yes,
that
yes.
batteries have been around for so long and you're relatively early on your journey.
Yes, definitely.
Right. And that being said, how far have you come? So maybe shine a bit of light on the journey out of the research group spinning out the company and the first steps as an entrepreneur.
Yes, so let's think. It was about 3 years ago when we first had the idea to start a company. And then we slowly processed in the beginning. So we tried to learn as an academic, what does it mean to start a company? What is
Yeah,
needed?
right.
What are basically the KPIs? And then we hired someone to make a proof of concept of the design, to file a patent. We also wrote a scientific publication. And with all of this, we started then to apply for funding. And this was pretty much a year ago. The first funding we got was the business incubator from the European Space Agency, which then also forced us to incorporate,
Right.
which was a good thing.
External pressure sometimes helps to make decisions, huh?
Yes, definitely in that case. And then that really helped accelerating everything what we do, the whole pace, because once we were incorporated, we also had to put on our own money in the company. So basically, we had skin in the game, which starting a company in Switzerland is still, you need quite some capital on your own, which we didn't have just lying on the side. So this was quite a commitment from ourselves. And then this also showed commitment to investors. And then we were very quickly in contact with investors, which was also a very good sign for us. clearly showing that there's interest in solid
Right.
state batteries at the moment. And even earlier this year, we had closed our first financing round, which is very exciting, with our first VC, the German VC HTGF, and a Swiss bank ZKB, which allows us even to grow further.
Yeah, congrats on that achievement. I mean, not so easy to raise money in these times or in these times. Can you maybe give a bit more background on how that was from incorporating the company and then already being in contact with VCs? Because I imagine that game is very different from the one that you were used to in academia, where it's very much about scientific accuracy and, you know, working on papers, working in research groups, and all of a sudden, you know, you have to pitch for money. I mean, writing, I guess, research grant applications is not that different, but it's a very different approach. And I guess what you need to tell, how you tell stories, and so on. So maybe you can give a bit of background on how that was for you as someone who comes from out of academia to, well, raise the first round, that whole experience, and how easy or hard that was for you.
Yes, definitely. So one thing which was interesting in our case, we had a good outreach from all of these fundings which we got. So the VC came to us, and so we didn't even plan on reaching out to them that early, but they reached out to us, which was very good in that sense, because
right,
we had a very quick discussion with them. And you can see it in our presentation, how they changed over time, really the transition. So in the beginning, it was a lot of technical details in our presentation. So we really focused on the product and our technology, what we want to achieve. And the longer we got in this journey, we realized, okay, this is maybe not so much needed. They most of them trusted that we know what we are doing. So this was reduced strongly and strongly. And now it's usually one page in a PowerPoint presentation, the technology itself.
Yeah, that's the real interesting part, right? Because this is also the observation that we always have when working with climate tech companies, that the tech side of things is really strong, and there's a lot of text and detailed graphics and you know, scientific depictions of the process, the IP, and so on.
Yes.
But in order to tell the story right and to really capture interest for what it is that you're doing, that part sometimes is neglected. I mean, you and other teams burn for these ideas and have skin in the game and are deeply involved with it. But in order to convince someone else to join that journey, maybe a bit more is needed.
Yes, indeed, definitely. And that was the good thing to speaking to VCs very early on, because they helped us in shaping basically our company and also what we need to get invested. So they really helped us from day one. And not only then, we also had good advisors which helped shaping the story and the storyline, and also how the strategy, in a way, how we build up the company.
Right. Yeah, that's really nice to hear. So you said the funding round was earlier this year, or the first closure of the funding round was earlier this year. What's next for you? Where do you want to go with that additional funding?
Yes. So what's next? So if we look at this week, it's very much trying to hire a new person from a business side, management side perspective, into our team, which is at the moment very strong technical skill sets. This is a very short time frame, so we'll do this still this week. We just had our first job advertising 5 days ago, and was very positively surprised that already, I think, 150 applications by now, and some
Wow,
of them
that's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and some of them I would say are very good, so I was
Right.
very positively surprised. But then, besides from that, one of my big goals at the moment is to find very early adopters of our technology for pilot projects. So very early on, we would like to validate our technology through external partners, through projects, and also very early on get feedback to know what we're exactly developing. So I'm speaking a lot to potential customers and partners, and to see where is the right fit, where early we can early on give them some cells from ours that they can actually integrate, and also use this knowledge to help decide in which direction our product will be developed.
Right.
Because
Yeah, I
yeah,
guess
this is.
that's the helpful feedback that you also need in order to decide on the next steps. And
Yes.
again, probably the same pattern that you just described when talking to VCs applies also here, that early feedback is really helpful in, well, for you to decide on the next steps and really get those right.
Yes, definitely, because there are so many directions which we could develop in. We could make batteries for many different applications, and so really knowing where is the demand early on, we can focus on that and develop in that direction. While still having a, of course, being open to other applications in the long run.
Yeah, sure. I mean that I guess won't be the challenge to limit or to not limit the number of applications will not be a
Yes,
challenge.
of
I
course.
think it's rather the opposite way that you now need to decide where you want to go first.
Yeah, and then what else? I'm already, of course, thinking about the next financial round.
Right.
So thinking a lot about finances and also talking to potential investors for next rounds, to see also what they want to see that we can achieve, to again further grow the company.
Yeah, I think that's also interesting, right? That I guess saying is that you never stop raising money, like after that round is just before the next round. That now that you've just closed the seed round, you're already in sort of conversations for a Series A, and so sort of planning ahead to accelerate that growth journey.
Yeah, actually, we just closed the pre-seed round, so we are even
Right,
looking
so
for
it's
seed
the seed round
investors.
that's being prepared.
Yes.
And on that note, maybe because we talked about sort of the long-term perspective, and as you've just closed the pre-seed round, where do you think battery will be in, say, 3 to 5 years or whatever time horizon is manageable for you? Because I guess from you just described that, right? Like it's a very much even week by week, day by day focus that sometimes is needed in order to scale the company while preparing the next funding round is a more long-term
Yes.
endeavor. So maybe, yeah, tell me a bit about what is the long-term plan.
So right now what we're aiming to do is with also with the money we raised, we first want to build a product in the lab which we can hand out, but at the same time we also want to work together with large scale equipment manufacturers from the semiconductor industry to rent their pilot lines and show that we can manufacture our cells on their pilot lines. So in a way, proof of manufacturability, which gives us the know-how, how to work with them, to know the whole area of the manufacturers a bit better, to also know the machines which we will need for our own pilot line, and also the costs involved in scaling this production, and also the throughput and the quality of this layer. So we are already now talking to many of these companies and having the first offers and planning to start first tests this summer. This is more on a short term, I would say. If we know this within our seed round, we would like to build our own pilot line production in Switzerland for these batteries, to already be able to sell batteries to IoT applications. And then also with these batteries start validating for other applications. Consumer electronics is one thing which would be very interesting, making use of the fast charging speed especially.
Right.
And then still space, although space has very long certification periods, so we want to start early on then. And then having this, we of course want to scale further and have our first serial production, ideally also in Switzerland.
That's exciting because normally, I guess you wouldn't hear a company necessarily in the battery space to say, look, serial production in Switzerland. Can you shine a bit of light on why that?
Definitely. So our process is in a way special that we use already machines which exist from an existing industry. So it's really a semiconductor industry. So we literally can buy machines from a catalog. We just have to
That's
change
nice.
yes, we just have to change the processes. And these this industry usually, for example, if you look at glass coating, if you look at coating of huge glass panels, these are the same machines. And these are very large lines which operate 24/7 with very little operators. So the Ideally, as you have little operators, you can also do it in a country where labor cost is very expensive, like Switzerland. One of the important factors will be the electricity price, because our manufacturing technique needs a lot of electricity. It doesn't need any liquids, any toxic electrolytes or any solvents, which is good, but it needs a lot of electricity. So definitely we have to see where we get where we can produce, where we can get a good deal on electricity prices as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess also from a geopolitical perspective, which also has been a topic on this podcast a number of times, bringing back capacity into Europe is obviously a core
Yes.
approach now and a core strategy. And to sort of say, look, a normal step, I guess, in the past would have been to look into other regions in the world and as a quite natural first step to have production there. But now I think, given what we've learned over the last couple of years, having production back in Europe is a strategic advantage.
Yes, exactly. And also, considering that both Switzerland is very strong and companies for vacuum coating, but also Germany, for example, is also very strong in vacuum coating. So there we are now. We're also happy to have investors from Germany and Switzerland, because I think these are two countries which are very strong history in this field. So this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. As we just talked about that part once more, maybe we can sort of close that, at least in my head, it's not fully closed. If someone listens to the podcast and says, well, I'm working in a research group right now and have come up with something unique, have identified a gap where I think that could be a company in the future, what would your advice be? What are the first good steps to validate whether spinning this out as a company is a good idea? Because you talked about it beforehand with sort of we followed the academic approach.
Yes.
What are the KPIs? What's your experience? What is your advice having done and followed that process?
Yes, that's a good point. So what we did and what I can definitely recommend is trying to reach out to someone at the university. They usually have someone for technology transfer. The first time we did this, we learned what it needs to make a company, and this is in the first step. This is almost like a cooking recipe, and so it's very clear steps what you have to do, and then you already start realizing, okay, what do I need to do to achieve this? For example, very important factor is to have a patent, at least a patent application filed. Then, of course, talking to people, getting advice in this direction, because there's many new aspects you have to think out of, especially if you come from research to do this. This is valuable, and especially talking to many different people and getting their opinions, because they will have very different opinions sometimes, and then trying to make your own somewhat in between. Very crucial is also to have the right co-founder. So especially in the deep tech, it's very good to be a team, not only for yourself, because you have someone to share everything with and to talk, which is very good, but also from investors, it's very often required. And to also make sure that you have the right co-founder. So I saw many companies in an early stage struggling with that. Either they don't have a co-founder yet and they're in a dating phase in a way, trying to find one, or in a way they committed too early and they didn't talk about all the necessities. For example, what is the role distribution, what are the equity splits, and all of this, and then that is also difficult to grow healthy and to really find someone that you can trust. And
I
this
guess
is
especially getting the foundation right in that early crucial phase, because I guess you need to have quite honest and quite hard conversations, and to have those, you need to have the right level of trust bit. Because if you decide on an equity split, well, that's going to be the one that you're going out to investors with and pitching a
Yes.
company, and that's not going to change in the future.
I was lucky there in a way. The co-founder Abi, we worked together for the last 4 years already, and even in the same office, and we went to many conferences together, so we had many chances to really get to know each other, and also on a personal level, know what the other person is motivated by, and what are the yeah, the values a person is driven by. I think this is very important to align, to also in a way have the trust to move quickly when needed.
Yeah, because ultimately you're going to do this for the foreseeable future.
Yes.
And you know, you need to be able to trust this person fully, and you're most likely going to see a whole lot of more of them than anyone else, I guess, that's close to you. You know, you said before that you're a father of two, so your partner and your kids, I mean, hopefully you're still going to see them a whole lot, but the person that you're founding the company with is probably the one that you talk to the most on a day-to-day basis, at least during the week.
Yes, definitely. We definitely talk a lot. Although there are also periods where, because we have a clear role differentiation, and then there are times where you have so many things to do, so you basically don't see yourself see each other a lot, because everyone has different meetings. And then it's very key to have the trust that you fully trust each other, that everybody can move forward.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And you just mentioned values as one key component in identifying who's the right co-founder for yourself. So I'm wondering, what is it that drives you? Because obviously, when we started this conversation, you said, "Look, I've lived in, you know, now the fourth European country, came out of academia, was very inclined to stay actually in academia, but now running or founding the company, running the company as the CEO, quite a different ball game. And now you even have big ambitions to grow the company and make a big impact. So what is it that makes you get up in the morning and say, well, another day of spending my time to revolutionize the battery industry? What is it that keeps you going?"
Yes. So usually it's my kids who make me get up in the morning.
Right. The natural alarm clock.
Yes, exactly. Which is very nice, and I try, because you mentioned it, and that I try to separate this very strongly, to have kids time in the morning and in the evening dedicated, which is also very important for grounding myself and to have the balance.
Yeah, I guess the challenges that you're facing in your day work are very different from handling kids.
Yes, very different. And then besides that, it what drives me really is the chance to have an impact, and to really have see the possible impact we can have with this company, to really have the chance to transform a sector, which is a huge thing. So this is definitely a very strong motivation. And also, what is nice to see, and it's somewhat different to academia, in the spin-off company now, we clearly see a correlation between the time we invest in a certain task and the progress. Whereas in research, this correlation is not always there. You can spend a lot of time in one direction, but there's no progress.
Right.
So this is a very clear difference, and this is also something motivating. You really can plan strategically where you want to have fast progress and work in this direction.
I think that's a really good reflection. Yeah. I mean, I haven't spent as much time as you in academia, but I think that's a really insightful point, that whoever has written a bachelor, master, thesis, or you know, PhD, one knows this, that you spend a whole lot of time with those documents, with your research, and that progress that you make, and you I guess I would argue you make progress every day. It's just not as visible. Whereas in the business world, you know, if you have that meeting that opens another door, you can really feel that things are moving forward a whole lot of quicker.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And then another thing which really motivates me is also to try to build a company culture, to try to build a company with our own culture, which are kind of reflected with our own values, and to build a great team here, which are motivated for the same vision. This is definitely also something very enjoyable and motivating.
Well, Moritz, thank you so much for making the time today. All the best with scaling up battery. Looks like you're really onto something, and then fingers crossed that you'll be able to raise the seed round quickly, and then scale up production in Switzerland. I think it's a really exciting tech and a really exciting dream that you have in front of you. All the best, and thank you for making the time today.
Thank you very much, Jan. It was a pleasure talking to you.